Hello, everyone. Welcome to TacticTime.com. And that's right, yours aren't deceiving you. This isn't Tim Brennan. I'm Andy Panetta, and I'm guest hosting today. We thought we would do a little role reversal and give Tim Brennan the opportunity to be on the other side of the podcast. So welcome, Tim.
Hey, thanks, Andy. Thanks. Appreciate that. It's a great idea you had.
Yeah, I'm just here, almost probably going to just hijack your whole show here.
Okay, that's cool. Go for it.
All right, sounds good. So holidays keeping you busy?
Yeah, I'm actually in Pittsburgh right now visiting my mom, and I'm coming back to Colorado tomorrow. So, yeah, it's been real nice.
It's been great. It's been great here. We've had good weather. We had our white Christmas before Christmas, so didn't spoil anything, and but most of that snow is still on the ground. But the weather's been nice here in Colorado.
Oh, great.
So thanks for taking me up on the offer to host your show. I've enjoyed listening to many of your podcasts out there from chess players from around the state, and I think it's kind of a neat thing you do.
Thanks.
You know, most of us chess players tend to be a little more on the introvert side, and I found it kind of interesting that once you get people talking, they can be kind of chatty after a while, so it's kind of fun listening to all the stories.
Yeah, I've actually had a couple people, you know, that I've asked to do it, and, you know, they say no because they're too shy or they don't have anything to talk about. And when I interviewed Fred Spell, his wife told me later that that was the most she had ever heard him talking on the phone in his whole life or something like that. So,
that's good.
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah, Fred can be a kind of a quiet guy.
Right.
So, anyway, well, let's turn the tables here a little bit. Maybe talk about, you know, your chess career and how you got in. And looking at your on your website, I understand that you started chess a little bit later than most of us. You know, most of us started as kids and stuff. And sounded like you started a little bit later, and something about a Kasparov Deep Blue match got you going.
Right. Yeah, I was right out of college around 96, and, you know, I had some extra time on my hands because I wasn't constantly studying and stuff like that. So I Kasparov Deep Blue match was big news then, and that was the second one. And the year before, I had actually been in Philadelphia for there was a computer science conference that was being held where the first Deep Blue Kasparov match was, and the tickets to see it were like, I don't know, $15 or something, but I was like a starving college student, so I couldn't afford to go.
Right.
And, you know, the year after that, it was on TV, and, you know, I kind of got into it and started following it. Then that was when I kind of realized, you know, there's a whole world of competitive chess, and, you know, I had always known how to move the pieces and stuff, but I never studied it or anything. And,
so you'd never kind of stepped up to that tournament level yet. You knew how to play and stuff, but didn't realize there was kind of another world behind the door there.
Exactly. And, you know, I found a couple people at work that knew how to play, and I would play them, and, you know, chess on the internet was starting to grow at that point too. And so, yeah, but I, you know, I didn't get into it till I was in my 20s, really.
Okay, great. Well, you seem to have started out like a lot of us and started in, you know, Class B Patzer range. And then it sounds like you had this encounter with chess tactics. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what that was all about?
Yeah, so I, you know, I started playing, and, you know, a lot of people, they think, you know, they're pretty good at chess, and then they meet some people that are tournament level chess players,
yeah.
Then
mm-hmm.
they realize, oh God, I'm terrible, you know.
Right.
And so, you know, I picked up some chess books here and there, you know, some like Yasser Serwin's books and Chess for Dummies and stuff like this. And but, you know, I was still kind of stuck at like the 1,100, 1,200 range. And there's a story I wrote on my blog about how my friend that I was working with at the time, it was Shannon Fox, and he invited me and Pete Short over to his house, and Pete and Shannon were playing a game together, and, you know, I was like 1,100 at the time, and, you know, after the game, I made a couple comments, and, you know, Shannon kind of made a comment along the lines of, like, you don't know what you're talking about, because you're only, you know, a D player, you know, and I was like really offended by that, and actually like stormed out, and I was really pissed. And you know, he later apologized, but I mean, I kind of right there and then, you know, decided that,
right,
you know, I was going to do whatever it takes to get to the next level and, you know, improve my rating. And, you know, I felt really disrespected. And, so I kind of started looking into, you know, how to get better at chess. And, you know, the main thing that really influenced me was this article that was on chesscafe.com that was called how to gain 400 points in 400 days.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's got a really catchy title. And, I mean, that's exactly what I wanted to do. I wanted to raise my rating. And so it was written by a guy named Michael De La Maza, and basically what he said was that there's a big difference between chess knowledge and chess ability. And, you know, chess knowledge is just kind of, you know, adding stuff about chess into your brain, you know, like how to checkmate with a bishop and knight versus a bear king, or, you know, certain variations and openings and novelties and stuff like that.
Right.
And then chess ability is basically winning games and gaining rating points. And basically what he said was that most chess games are determined by tactics. And, you know, at the time, I think I had borrowed How to Reassess Your Chess from the Denver Library, which I lived really close to the library there, and they have a huge selection of chess books. And, you know, I just started doing nothing but studying tactics. And then, you know, my rating went from in the 1200s, like, into the 1600s, I mean, you know, almost immediately. And,
yeah, well, there's your 400 points, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I pretty much skipped being a C player altogether. I went from being a D player to a D player.
You just jumped that whole class then, huh?
Right, exactly. And
wow,
so that was, you know, kind of my main chess story. And even now, I still don't really know that much about chess knowledge. I mean, like, I was at the club in Colorado Springs, and I was talking to Paul Covington, and, you know, he asked me, like, was that a Grunfeld you played? And, like, I don't even know what the Grunfeld is, or, you know.
Right.
So I still
you
don't
said, excuse
really...
me?
Yeah. I mean,
you
I've heard
said,
of
bless
it,
you, or something but... like that, right? Pardon you.
Right. No, I've heard of it, but, you know, I don't know what that means exactly, you know. So anyway, that's kind of my chess story and my motivation for creating my website.
Right. In fact, that was kind of my kind of leading to the next question I had. Is that how your tacticstime.com got started? Is that kind of how you wanted to expand on that kind of chess knowledge for kind of everyone else?
Yeah, because I think it's a really kind of overlooked point, you know, and I think people kind of have this idea, like, you know, I mean, you can read Chess for Idiots and then you say, like, okay, I know what a fork is and I know what a pin is and I know what a back rank mate is, and then you go and you play and you're still missing these moves in your game. So, you know, one of the newsletters I write about is, you know, learning is behavior change. And so if your behavior hasn't changed, then you haven't really learned anything. And I think, you know, I went to this, I read his book, The Secrets of the Millionaire Mind, and the author in the book, T. Harv Eker, one of the things he talks about is the three most dangerous words in the English language are, I know that. And he's saying that, you know, once you have this idea, like, I know that, then you've kind of closed your mind to like either really knowing something or really understanding or to new ideas or stuff like that.
Right.
So I think a lot of go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you know, that's a really good point in that I know, at least in my experience, I tend to, in certain situations, get so what I call target fixation. You know, you see a move on the board and you just can't get your mind off it. And you're just crunching that particular move and, you know, moves thereafter. And a lot of times I don't get off of that. And I have a real, you know, nice move right next to it or something else endeavor. You just kind of get fixated on something that kind of that, I know that, you know, mentality.
Right. Or, you know, people miss easy tactics in the opening because they're kind of playing them by rote and they're not really even thinking. And I mean, I think,
yes. Uh-huh.
I think a lot of people would be capable of really improving their game if they just kind of made a few small little tweaks to either their thinking process or, you know, just really looking for tactics on every move. I mean, just that alone can,
mm-hmm.
can help you gain a lot of rating points, I think.
Yeah. And it certainly can push the game into a different, you know, just a different position and level. You know, when you might get somebody immediately out of a book line they might be familiar with and just they're not comfortable in those kind of situations.
Right, exactly. And, I mean, I think just a lot of stuff I see other people writing about chess, it doesn't really interest me, you know, like I think a lot of sites, you know, a lot of authors, all grandmasters and international masters and stuff like that. And, I mean, they don't want to be writing about stuff like knight forks or, you know.
Yeah, they're looking for a higher level kind of reader, probably.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, there's not a lot of people. I mean, those guys, I mean, it'd be like they're discussing calculus and I'm discussing,
mm-hmm.
you know, basic arithmetic. But I think a lot of chess players out there are reading about, you know, differential equations, but they haven't even mastered really the arithmetic, or they think they might, but they're still making basic arithmetic errors in their games, you know, so.
Right, absolutely, absolutely.
And myself
included. So, Tim, we can all learn, I think, from where we stand as far as, you know, our level of play. It's always an upward kind of game, hopefully.
Right.
So, Tim, how long did it take you to get into tournament chess? When did that happen? Is once you got a little bit more under your belt there?
I think it was really when I moved to Denver, and I actually lived like 3 blocks from the Denver Chess Club. I mean, I was walking distance away. When they used to play at the VFW downtown, I lived like 3 blocks from there. So that was when I really got into it because I was so close and, you know, it was just so convenient. And, you know, I started playing every week and,
yeah.
You know,
now, did the club play every night, or did they have was it a weekly kind of thing, or how did they set?
Well, I mean, this was like around 2002, 2003, and I mean they were quite active at the time. I mean, you know, they had Tuesday night chess, and for a while they even had Friday night chess, and they, you know, they held quite a lot of tournaments, and you know, I was, you know, playing, you know, well over 100 rated games a year. And,
wow.
So, you know, that was when I was making, you know, my huge leaps of improvement as well. And I mean,
yeah, well, it was fun probably playing then too, you know, when you can, when you see your improvement and you know you're,
sure,
you know,
yeah,
you know you're moving up, that makes the game a lot more fun. So
definitely, yeah, definitely.
So what's your, what was your reaction or your first to your first exposure to tournament chess? What do you, what do you kind of remember kind of jumping in?
Well, I remember my my very first game at the Denver Chess Club. I thought I was winning, and then, you know, I completely missed a mate and won against the guy.
Okay.
And you know, he checkmated me, and I remember thinking, like, how did I miss that? And, you know, I was
isn't
so,
that,
I mean,
amazing
it,
when you're on the board, but what it just, everything looks different, you know?
Yeah, you know, so I had to, you know, a lot of lessons learned, you know, and, you know, I mean, you gotta be willing to lose, you know, a lot of games to kind of get these little lessons under your belt, whether it's about time management or, you know, what to do when your opponent doesn't want to take notation. And especially, like, in the, there's a lot more shenanigans down in the D section than once you get up to, you know, over 1600.
Yeah.
I mean, there's, you know, people making illegal moves, and, you know, the one time.
So you're,
go ahead.
So you're not too shy about pointing out some of the subtleties and the rules of the game, Tim? Are you pretty forthcoming if, like you just mentioned, somebody not taking notation or the clock kind of thing? Do you generally kind of jump on that a little bit? Or?
Yeah, it kind of depends. I mean, I'm not a super stickler about it, but yeah, I mean, I like it when people follow the rules. I mean,
sure,
you know, just like everybody does. I mean, it's
easier for everyone, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not fair. I mean, if I'm taking notation and the other guy doesn't even make an effort, you know, but but like I said, I mean, once you get a little higher up, it's not as much of an issue. But you know, you don't want to let it distract you either, because some people will get all worked up if if their opponent's kind of bending the rules a little bit, you know.
Sure.
Let that screw
sure.
up. Sure.
Yeah, that's kind of always a, you know, we all learn how to play and stuff, but, you know, it wasn't until late in my chess career that I actually bought the rule book, and, you know, it's kind of, you know, just sitting down and reading the rules, you're sitting, I kept telling myself, geez, I didn't know that, I didn't know that, you know. But it makes it all better. I think the game is better when you know, the organizers and the players themselves kind of know, you know, what the rules are and how to abide by them. I think it just makes the game all that better.
Yeah, and I did some tournament directing for a while too, so, you know, I was pretty familiar with them. And
That's probably some good experience, I think, to probably have, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really do it anymore because it's just such a thankless job. But
I can imagine.
but, yeah.
But we need those people around, Tim, you know, otherwise there wouldn't be any tournaments. With you on that.
Yeah, I know. And I, you know, I always try to thank them when the tournament's over, you know, because it's a tough job. And, you know, not fun.
So you were originally from Pennsylvania, so what brought you out to Colorado then, Tim?
I moved out there for my job.
Okay.
Software engineering, that was the main reason.
Okay. So there was a job that brought you to Colorado, is that it then?
Right, yeah, exactly.
Right. Did you ever visit Colorado prior to that, or was that a new experience then?
Well, I was living in Dallas actually, and I was constantly traveling to Denver for work, and then it kind of, all the traveling was kind of wearing me out. So,
oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's like, well, can I just move there? I mean, it'd be cheaper than you guys buying, you know, $1,000 plane tickets all the time. And
right.
So
they must they listen to you then, huh?
Yeah. So that was kind of how it happened. I mean, it wasn't part of a larger plan. Really. It was just kind of the most practical thing at the time, and I ended up staying there, and so that was kind of what happened.
Uh huh. So, out of your chess career, there, Tim, what's your best experience? What do you like the most, or can you share a good experience that you've had in playing or a tournament or something like that?
Well, I've been having a lot of fun with my website. You know, I've heard from people all over the world and, you know, got to know some people better than I did before. And, you know, I like looking at other people's games. And, you know, yesterday I had a guy send me a message on Facebook, and he was saying, like, hey, I want to thank Tim Brennan because I used a tactic that – you know, he had, I don't know if he saw one of my newsletters or whatever, but he kind of credited me for the, for winning. So, I mean, you know, that's really cool, you know, that.
Nice.
Yeah, that, you know, people.
There's some satisfaction in that, I would think.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. You know, because, I mean, it's just, you know, I see some of these people that are just playing year after year after year, and it doesn't seem like they're getting any better. And, you know, I think it can be frustrating. And, you know, I know if I hadn't raised my rating, I mean, I wouldn't have been able to keep playing. You know, I would just said to hell with this and gone on to something else and
take up something else. Yeah.
So I think kind of the things I've been putting in my newsletters and blog, I mean, I think people are kind of resonating with it. And I mean, it's not rocket science. I mean, I sometimes call it like the elusive obvious, that, you know, I think a lot of games, I mean, just between 1400s and 1600s and below, I mean, they're being lost by really, really simple moves. And if you can just not avoid these terrible blunders, I mean, you can win a lot more games.
Sure. Sure. Yeah, I think, you know, patience is one of those virtues that, you know, you kind of have to have.
Right.
And just kind of hang in there and kind of wait for those opportunities. Because in my experience, in most games, you play with someone, you know, plus or minus probably, you know, 200 points either way, you know, you're going to get a shot. It just
right.
seems like you're going to get your time. There's going to be a pause in the game, and you've just got to figure it out. And everyone, you know, you always get a chance. Sometimes you get two or even more, but generally you get one. And,
right.
you just have to be ready to take advantage of that. And often, you're often it, right. It involves some sort of little combination, some sort of tactic shot, double attack, you know, whatever you want to call it. So.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, there's
very good.
When I was I was in Reno in October, and I tied for first in the B section, and I won like $600. And
wow.
I mean, every single one of my games, I mean, at some point I had a worse position, and I mean, I just kept digging and looking for tactics and trying to keep it tactical, and you know, I ended up, you know, I won 5 out of 6 games. And so
very nice.
Think,
congratulations.
Yeah.
That's a good tournament.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And so
did you leave with 600 or did you just blow it there in Reno?
They pay you out right at the end. So basically I collected my money, then had to go to bed and fly out in the morning, so I didn't have time to
They hand it
the
to you right next
table.
To the one-armed bandit there, then?
Oh, yeah. They actually give it to you in cash, like right at the casino cashier's cage, yeah, because they don't want
uh-huh.
you to leave with all of that, you know, or have
right.
a cash check or something.
You've talked about that Reno tournament. I can't remember if you've talked about it on Tactics Time that might be where I read a little bit about it, but that's a tournament you've kind of frequented or kind of put a star next to.
Yeah, I really like playing in Reno, and probably one of my best chess memories is when my buddy Francisco beat Walter Brown there in a simul with the fishing pole. And
is that the one that's on a video or something?
Yeah.
But
and then it's kind of gone viral a little bit in the internet chess world with
YouTube
with,
or something like that.
Yeah, I made a video of it live as he was playing it, and you know, Anthea put that in her book, and Chris Peterson made a funny video with Ryan Wall annotating the game, and you know, Joel Johnson put the game in his formation attacks book, and so I think that was really cool seeing seeing my buddy, you know, beating a GM and.
Right,
moves.
That's something you can trip up the GM like that.
Yeah, and, you know, the game was, you know, pretty much 100% tactics. You know, the game, you know, the fishing pole, everyone kind of says, oh, it's not sound and this and that. And so that was a really fun moment for me, you know.
Right.
One of my best chess memories,
nice.
Definitely, yeah.
Good. So with that, well, what about on the other side? What's kind of a bad experience you've had? Because I think all of us have probably encountered one or several of those along the way in terms of chess. You got anything that sits down in the dregs of the chess world?
Well, not too much. I mean, you know, I try to have an attitude, you know, there is no failure, only feedback kind of thing where, you know, even your, quote, failures, you know, as long as you learn something from them, you know, they're really positive. So I try not to dwell too much on, you know, negative type stuff or stuff in the past. Because even, like, that story with Shannon, I mean, you know, it was kind of negative at the time, but it also really motivated me to get better because I wanted to come back and crush the guy.
Sure.
And, you know, so in a way, you know, even though it was bad that he insulted me,
you know, revenge is always best served up cold, you know.
Yeah, exactly. you don't always know, like, something seems negative now, but later on you realize, oh, it was positive, or, you know, you don't really have to label things as negative or positive because you never know.
Not really.
I mean, of course, there's a couple jerks here and there, but I mean, I think that's true of anything you're involved with, work, school, hobbies, you know. So for the most part,
right.
I think the chess world has a lot of really nice people in it.
Good. That's good to hear. So, Tim, do you, you know, with everything you got going on, and you are obviously very knowledgeable kind of in the internet here and seem to be kind of taking some of this social media kind of in with your tactics time. Do you have some chess goals that you would like to accomplish or continue doing or improving, that kind of thing?
Well, I mean, I've gotten up to, you know, in the 1800s, and I mean, mostly right now I'm trying to, you know, kind of build my email list and, you know, work on my website. I'm not really trying to, I don't know, be a master or anything like that. I mean, I'm pretty happy with my chess play in general. I mean, I end up studying a lot of tactics and stuff, just doing my website, my newsletters, and, you know, I've never really found a lot of the other stuff all that interesting anyways, you know, like annotated games or, you know, openings and stuff like that. So, you know, I think you can get pretty far just studying tactics. I mean, I think I could definitely get to, you know, 1900s, 2000s. I mean, just kind of doing what I'm doing now. So those would be my main, I mean, like I said, my main goals right now are kind of related to my website, trying to get more subscribers. And stuff, but as far as
Well, by the look of it and everything, and just, you know, your almost daily blogs there, you seem to be doing pretty well there.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, I get a couple new subscribers every day. And
what kind of number are you up to these days?
I have about 250 right now. And
okay.
On Twitter, I have like 2,500 followers and been kind of
around right?
with that lately. And
so do you have to feed your Twitterers out there, or are they they're always looking for something from you, or how does that work?
Well, as far as getting subscribers or?
Yeah, or, you know, you said you had followers, so,
yeah, so basically,
how does that all work?
So basically you follow somebody, like you can follow Kim Kardashian, for example, and then anytime she writes something, it shows up in your feed so you can read what she wrote about, you know, but they're all like really small. Like, they're only 140 characters long, so they're just like little bite-sized chunks or like micro-blogs,
uh-huh.
they call them. So, you know, I post stuff like little quotes about chess or links to something I've read that's interesting. And so, you know, basically I try to improve, you know, every day a little bit, you know, and then eventually, you know, it's just like chess study. I mean, if you try to improve a little bit every day, I mean, Tony Robbins has a thing he talks about where he's talking about, you know, if you can improve 1% every day at something, or just improve yourself 1% every day, then, you know, that starts to compound, and then you start to really start to see a significant difference in the end. So that's kind of what I try to do is, you know, improve
okay.
my website and everything, you know, at least 1% a day. And then after a while, it starts to get a lot better.
Great. Well, I'm glad to hear that, you know, your list is growing, and that's great. I mean, that word's kind of getting around, or, you know, when people search for tactics, your stuff probably pops up there. So.
Yeah, there's a couple of things. I'm actually, like, if you search for Fritz 13 review, I think I'm near the top on Google. I get a lot of people coming to my website looking for information about Fritz, which I use a lot and
okay.
know a fair
okay.
amount about and written about. And so I get a lot of hits from that, actually. And
okay.
So, yeah, it's kind
nice.
Of fun. I mean, it's kind of like a little hobby for me, all this, like, internet marketing and internet
right.
blogging.
Yeah, and you'd mentioned – Tim, you had mentioned, and I can't remember again where I read this. I don't know if it was maybe on your blog, but you know, you had talked about kind of the state of Colorado's website for chess, you know, and you threw out some ideas about, you know, maybe having this and doing that, and you know, our website's pretty static as it is, and
yeah.
although very functional, I think it's very
sure.
functional for I think the majority of the players, but. You threw out some ideas to kind of expand it and, you know, push it out there a little bit more. So did you get much feedback from that, or I never did really see anything about it?
No, not really. No, I don't think I really got any feedback. I mean, maybe one or two people that weren't in charge, like, said, yeah, those are good ideas, you know.
yeah, go ahead and do that as long as somebody else is doing it, right?
Right, you know. So, I mean, yeah, it's not bad, and it serves its purpose. I mean, and it's
uh-huh.
a lot better than, you know, I was digging through lots of chess club websites when I was looking for games, and, you know, I saw a lot of really, really, you know, really bad ones. I mean, they would just give you a headache if you looked at the page for more than about 10 seconds, you know.
Okay.
So...
Which ones did you like? Were there any that kind of stood out there that you said, wow, they really got
yeah.
going?
Yeah, there was one, it was like the Northwest Chess. It was kind of like for the Washington State, Oregon State area.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Their site was awesome. There was a small chess club in Massachusetts. It was really cool. I mean, some of these websites, I mean, they have, like, thousands of games that their clubs have played, and, you know, just normal people. Because I was looking for games, you know, just players like you and me, you know, B players, C players.
Right.
You know, those are the kind of games I was looking for. And, you know, because all the interest is in Grandmaster games, not Patzer games. And so that was, you know, I was digging through all these clubs. And, I mean, there's so many, like, Broken Links and stuff like that. But, I mean, it was kind of fun. And, you know, I just added a couple games here and there. And but it was really nice, the site that had, you know, here's a database of games.
Uh-huh.
You can just download it and, you know, really cool. But, you know, that's like 1 out of 100 that has something
okay.
like that. Yeah.
Well, it's still pretty amazing what's, you know, out there now and probably is yet to come, you know, because it's all about information, as you probably know, in your business and job.
Right. Yeah. And, yeah, exactly. And, I think, you know, now that I'm starting to look at, like, learn a little bit more of this, I mean, the chess world's really behind compared to, like, a lot of other industries and stuff like that when it comes to the marketing and the websites and stuff like that, you know. It's, but it's all about competition. I mean, no one's going to get rich in the chess world. But, you know, if you're marketing stuff about diet and fitness, you know, if you're not really a sharp person when it comes to marketing, I mean, you're just going to get crushed. Cause, I mean,
forget that.
You know, yeah, some of the smart
people. They have their own tactics in the business world, you know.
Oh, yeah, right. I mean, they're just geniuses when it comes to, you know, persuasion and stuff like that. So it's kind of interesting.
Tim, I thought I'd give you a chance for a shameless plug here on a product that you've got on your website. And I was looking at that the other day, and it seems to be on sale for $19, down from $59. Can you tell us a little bit about what you got going on there?
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's just a, you know, marketing trick, obviously. You know, it was never really $59. But, yeah, so basically I sell a database, and I've still been working on it. I haven't really been pushing it that hard because I'm constantly kind of adding to it, and I need to kind of draw a line in the sand and stop trying to make it better and better and better. But so basically, I mean, it kind of just encapsulates my philosophy of what people should be studying if they want to improve, and that's like basic tactics. So it's basically a collection of tactics problems from real games with real players, you know, not games between grandmasters or one computer engine playing another computer engine. And, you know, some of the games are, you know, they're not pretty, the openings are weird, and but, you know, they contain interesting tactics. And to me, I mean, it's almost like being an anthropologist where, you know, I'm trying to figure out, like, why are people winning and losing chess games? And, you know, it's really just a lot of stupid, simple mistakes. I mean, hanging pieces, you know, people missing knife fork. I mean, and when you look at the tactics problems in the tactics books, I mean, they have all these, like, cool queen sacrifices and, you know, double discovered checks and smothered mates. And, you know, in reality, those things happen, you know, very, very, very rarely, you know. And so even if you are studying, you know, your traditional chess tactics book, you're studying stuff that's not all that practical, you know. It's you're kind of studying the outliers because they're more fun and they're more interesting. And, you know, even in my newsletter, I tend to put stuff like that because it's more interesting. But in reality, there's a lot of benefit to studying, you know, just simple tactics. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like a basketball game. I mean, on the highlights, you know, they're going to show the guy making the half-court shot. But in reality, you know, games aren't really won or lost because of half-court shots. I mean, they're won or lost because of you know, the guy making the layups, or, you know, just,
sure,
you know, kind of like John Wooden talking about, you know, UCLA winning all these college basketball championships because they really focus on fundamentals. So really what I have,
yep,
is a database of tactics that really focuses on fundamentals. And I'm trying to kind of get together an updated database, and I'm planning on throwing in some bonuses. And the cool thing, too, is you can read it on your you can go through the tactics, like, on your Kindle and stuff like,
okay,
that. So I know a lot of people probably got those for Christmas. So
that's right. I saw a whole bunch of those for Christmas.
Yeah. So I'm.
So Tim, it's a database then. Are there complete games, or does it just start with the position where the tactic begins?
Yeah. So it's a complete game, and then when you open the game, it's going to jump to the tactic, and then it's going to say, okay, enter the move for white or for black or,
okay,
whoever's turn it is to move, and then you look for the best move and then drag and drop the piece, and then it'll tell you if you were correct or incorrect. And
okay, so it keeps a score?
Pardon me?
Does it keep a score, or does it?
Yeah, then it gives you a score, and then you go to the next problem. And and if you want to play through the game or see how the game ended or see what the opening was, or, I mean, for you, you would know a lot of the players because I have a lot of games in there from Colorado, so you could even, you know, if you want to look at all the games with Anthea Carson, you know, you could do that, or, you know.
I see.
So there's a lot of games like that, and so that's the main idea. I mean, that was kind of the niche I was trying to fill. Nobody's looking at class player games and, you know, all the tactics.
Right.
I mean, a lot of these tactics books they're not even really original. They're taking, like, Fred Reinfeld's tactics and, you know, repackaging them. You know,
if you
get enough tactics books, you start to see the same problems over and over again. You know, people aren't even making their own original problems.
Yeah.
I try to, you know, have all my problems be original problems and not just, you know, copying and pasting other people's problems.
Nice. So Tim, is that a CD that someone would get if they purchased that then?
No, you can. Or
is it a download?
You download it. And, you know, I didn't want to get involved with trying to, you know, distributing or having a bunch of upfront costs and, you know, stuff like that. So if nobody buys it, I'm stuck with all this inventory or
I see.
Stuff
okay.
like that. I was thinking
pretty
about
sharp.
maybe at some point getting something that someone could actually buy and have a CD, you know, but right now it's just a download. And, you know,
okay.
I do update it, and, you know, if you buy it, then you get the updates for free. And,
okay.
You know, I'm online constantly, so if people have problems, you know, they can email me. And, you know, because I've tried to email Chess Base before, and, you know, I never hear back anything, and it's kind of annoying.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
You know, so it's not like I'm some big company and you're going to have to, you know, have a lot of hassle or something. And,
yeah.
You know, how's a guarantee? I mean, if you don't like it, you know, I'm not trying to get rich off of this, and, you know, I'll gladly give you your money back if you don't like it. And,
okay.
So.
Nice. Well, way to go.
Yeah, thanks. It's been fun, and, you know, it's kind of a labor of love, but, you know, I'm having fun doing it.
Well, I think you're probably hitting a, you know, there's a chance, you know, like you're saying, the class, C through maybe even A market, that, you know, that's kind of where those games are. You know, that's where our games kind of live, is
yeah,
those battle zones. And yeah, I'm always amazed, you know, just watching other games or even my games, where it just kind of boils down to one or two quick shots, and, you know, the material end kind of wins it for you if you end up on the positive side of that.
Yeah, right. I mean, a lot of these games, it's like the guy just falls asleep at the wheel, and, you know, it's really a shame. I mean, especially if you're playing some six-hour game or something, then you miss one move pawn fork, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think a lot of that is, you know, just trying to build up your patterns, and you really have to do it a lot. I mean, it's like doing math problems. I mean, you need to know that 7 times 8 is 56. You can't be sitting there in your head going, you know, okay, 7 plus 7 is 14, and then add another 7 is 21, and then 28. Okay, how many is that? That was 4. You know, I mean, some of these patterns, you gotta just know them cold. I mean, like the smothered mate pattern. So as soon as you see it, boom, you know, okay, check, mate, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the more of these little patterns you can have in your head, I mean, it just makes it so much easier. And, you know, I think everybody has little patterns that are difficult for them. I mean, for me, I know pawn forks are sometimes difficult. I miss tactics where the end move is a pawn fork or, you know, whatever. I mean, some people have a real hard time with the knight, I think. So it's,
yeah.
I think
knights are pretty difficult to see. I have a lot of difficulty with knights. I've just missed simple knight forks, and it's just, you know, I get pointed out later, and it's like, oh, man, how did I do that? You know?
Right, so exactly. And
the knight is a pretty tricky piece, so.
Right, and that's what's hard is, you know, some of these things, like if I put a tactic in the newsletter that it's just a one-move knight fork on c6, you know, forking the king and the rook, you know, or not c6, c7, you know, someone's going to email me like, oh, that was too easy or something. But it's like, you know, there's probably, you know, 10,000 games per day that somebody loses.
Blows
that. to that move, you know, I mean.
Yeah.
You know, especially with
well,
internet.
Well, like on your, isn't it on your website, the motto, what is it, repetition is the mother of skill or something like that?
Right. Yeah,
that's what you just got to stamp into your head, I guess, you know.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And that's a Tony Robbins thing is repetition is the mother of skill. And, you know, he talks a lot about your perceptual filters. And, you know, basically what he says is, you know, we have all the, you know, we have our 5 senses, our eyes, our ears, our nose, our mouth. And we got all these, like, millions and millions of bits of data coming at us constantly every second, you know, the sound of the air conditioner in the background and, you know, the smell of the pizza in the kitchen and, you know, the reflection of the light off of your shoe and, you know, just all this stuff. And so basically your brain can't possibly handle all of it at one time, so you're basically deleting 99% of all the stuff that comes at you at any given moment, and then that becomes the reality that you're processing. So he says that's why, you know, if you buy a brand new, you know, red Miata, then all of a sudden when you're driving down the road, you're going to start seeing Miatas all over the place, you know, and they were there all along, but you weren't processing them. And to me,
you never picked them out.
Yeah, exactly. And to me, it's the same with these tactical patterns. You know, if you just kind of drill them into your head, so that way, you can't like not see them. I mean, you look at the problem, the knight fork will just like pop right out at you because, you know, it's just so ingrained in your head. So that way, it just jumps out.
Well, the next time you're sitting next to me, can you kind of give me the stink eye when I've got a knight fork ready to go?
Well, yeah, and I mean, it happens to everybody, but, you know, it's and the knights are tricky. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. That's a fun piece. I really do like getting knights in the action.
Yeah, another one I have a hard time I miss sometimes is, like, we have a long, like, kind of double attack with the queen that kind of goes across the whole board. Like, the queen checks on A4, but then it picks up a piece that's all the way over
on sure.
A4.
Yeah,
you know,
it's a
like
sweep.
Right, mm-hmm. Ones like that I have a hard time seeing. Sometimes.
And a lot of times that happens right in the opening. You can
right. Yep.
You can pick off knights and bishops with that kind of move.
Yeah, exactly. The Black Queen, or the Black, the Black King plays, like, you know, a move like F6, and then you play Queen H5, check, and then you pick up a bishop on, you know, A5 or something.
D4 or something like that, A4, uh-huh.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then you started to see these same patterns. Like, even Dean Brown just posted a game from, he's playing in Vegas, like, tonight, and that was how we got the guy. He did a queen H5 check type thing, and the guy had moved his F-pawn, and, the king had to move, and then he had a knight fork, and so it was a really, really cool move, and, you know, these are the types of games. I mean, his opponent, you know, spent probably hundreds of dollars to fly to Vegas and $400 entry fee, and, you know, he's losing because of a two-move tactic, basically. And so,
yeah, that's going to happen, though.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Everybody's out there for it. So,
right.
Well, that's great. Well, Tim, I think maybe we should just wind this down and
thanks, Andy. It's fun.
Appreciate the opportunity to host in here and talk to Tactics Time, Tim.
Yeah, appreciate it. This is a lot of fun for me. Thanks.
So good. Well, continued success with your website, and always good to listen in on the podcasts. And you make it kind of fun. So appreciate all that work you do.
Well, thanks, Andy. Are you going to be at the Loveland Open? Maybe I'll see you up there.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I always make that tournament. So, I'll be there grinding it out as usual.
Okay, cool. Well, I'll see you there then.
Sounds good, Tim.
Okay.
And thanks.
Cool.
Thanks again.
Okay, thank you.
All right, see ya.
Okay.